Watch out, John. John's got a lot of energy, don't he? Could you imagine John on the amphetamine? What about crack cocaine? I could. So I drove up here all day, got up, drove all the way to Atlanta because I can. Got into traffic. Amazing traffic up here. Had a guy blow his horn at me, a few fingers. Had a beautiful young lady flash me. And I'm here thinking, you know, I need to move to Atlanta. I like Atlanta. Good energy. Right by the strip club. Kind of waved, didn't go in. Get to my hotel. John said, I'll pick you up 6:15. So I get dressed, you know, we'll look good in recovery. I'm in the lobby. John calls. He said, where you at? Lobby. I said, where you at? He said, lobby. You know what John did? Went to the wrong hotel. And I'll tell you something. My first thought is, that's not the first time John's gone to the wrong hotel. Just saying. So what a nice looking group, my family, alcoholics. And I look at you, boy, you look good tonight. Can you believe we're here on Friday night? We're beating odds on it. I get to come be with y'all. No other place I'd rather be. So for the grace of God, the fellowship, the sponsorship, the transformative steps of trusting God and cleaning up all the wreckage of my past, which must be done to get the spiritual awakening, to recover and be given power to help others. The miracle for me is I ain't had to drink or take any mood-altering drugs at all or get a diagnosis or another misdiagnosis. And I've had them all. Bipolar, tripolar, north polar. I had all the symptoms since October 24th of 1988. And that's a miracle. So I have a duty to come share with you, to bring you hope. That's what they did for me. I was hopeless. And the miracle is that this amazing program, just for alcoholics who suffer from alcoholism, didn't work for me, worked for you. And every miracle in that book has come true for me. It has worked for me as a result of being teachable and doing things I didn't believe in and getting real active. My sponsor had almost 40 years in AA. His sponsor had almost 50 years. And me and John was talking about the hardest thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you test this, is to go to meetings every day and to stay consistently active. You hear it all the time. People that relapse, I go and talk to them. Y'all know what the last thing to leave is? It's meetings. And so I try to go every day. I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. You know, coming to AA is better than going to the zoo, isn't it? We're colorful people. So I had kind of a sad life. I sat here to... So now I'll share a little bit about my story and how the program has worked for me and how to work for you. I grew up in alcoholism. I didn't know what it was, did you? You know, I've been a seeker. Have you always been a seeker? I always had one question in life. I said, God, what's wrong with me? I never fit in. Still don't. But I fit in AA. Why is that? Because we're mentally and bodily different from everybody else. I always knew that. God, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? And that was my greatest search as a seeker. And I talked to a lot of people in whom the problem had never been solved. And I talked to preachers and priests. You ever go to a preacher? You can't be honest, can you? Can't have it. I told him, Libby, you know what I told him? You're going straight to hell. I think I shared way too much with him. And then he said, God, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I'm mentally bodily different from everybody else. I have alcoholism. I never learned it until I got here. I didn't even know what it was. I don't have a drinking problem. Never liked being sober, did you? A lot of ways to sober up to it. You know, you don't get sober, slap a cop. Always get sober. But the difference between being sober and recovery is everything. A couple months, grace of God, worked in this program. I have 29 years. I've been in my 29th year. And this adventure is more exciting today than it's ever been. I mean, I love it so much. We're absolutely sure that God wants us to be happy. He wants us to be free. I'll share it with my friends. People all the time say, man, you're too happy. You know, pink cloud. You ever heard of that? Just ride it, you know. I tell people, if you think I'm too happy, blame God. Because we're absolutely sure God wants to be happy, Joel's free. See, the message tonight, aren't you free? God, I'm free, man. I just couldn't do nothing. I couldn't do anything. I'd take one drink, take the edge off, man. I'd be hiding in the room looking through those windows, the blinds. I'm paranoid. You ever get paranoid? We got a new meeting in town called Paranoid Anonymous. He's looking it up right now, right there. I call him. You know where they meet? They won't tell anybody. So then I went to psychiatrist. God, what's wrong with me? My mother said, you need help. You ever had anybody tell you you needed help? Every day. Love psychiatrists, didn't you? Just go in there and lie. Oh, they pat you on the head. Well, they bring good news, though, don't they? You know what they told me? They said, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to need pills the rest of your life. You know what I did? I hugged him. Love pills. Oh, my God. Oh, need them. And then they ask really, really personal questions, don't they? That's sex life. You ever been? They said, I'd like to know about sex life. I can tell you, I don't know anything about you. That's personal. He said, I'm going to help you, man. He's like, I've tried getting in your head. I need to know all about you to help you. I need to know about your personal experience. Do you love it? Do you have pain, joy, fear? I said, God, I loved it. Oh, I loved it. I just wished I could have shared it with somebody. Some of you laughing a little too loud. Some of you trying to hide a little bit. You know, that's what I did. But I didn't know what was wrong with that. I never took a drink. But I suffered from the spiritual malady. I was always a little different. Poor mother was an alcoholic. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mother, like Bill Wilson talked about, she never took a drink, and she's 35 years old. You know, it's not how much you drink, where you drink, what kind you drink, it's what it does to you that make you an alcoholic. She took that first drink, and the miracle happened. Remember how the promises come true? God, everybody loves us. Orchestra played. God, we're men and women. Could drink with a fat. He was electric, wasn't it? Loved him in the beginning. And within 5 years, she's full-blown alcoholic. Poor mom. Beautiful mom. Voted prettiest mom in school, in high school. And when she died at 62. She looked like she was 100. My mother died in an alcoholic coma. Treatment 3 times. Paid 25. A lot of people can't sober up. Have you seen that in AA? How can you get mad at an alcoholic? He has a disease of lack of power that's greater than he is. It's almost like sometimes in AA we're stunned when somebody comes to a meeting drunk. Yeah. Let him speak. But it's a sad disease of unconsciousness. You know, alcoholics and drug addicts live way down here, man, in unconsciousness. We elevate. In AA, we get conscious. First step, get conscious. Alcohol of any form. And then we deal with your subconscious through meditation and prayer. Then we find out why you drink, and we find a way to discover God where you don't ever have to use and sedate and tranquilize anymore. And that's called a guilty conscience. You see, a clear conscience never has to sedate anymore, does it? I have no need anymore. I live the right way. I have to live the right way. I love living the right way. And then we move on up, we elevate, and we deal with that inventory, our consciousness. And then we make direct amends as best we can. We keep elevating. And then we improve our conscious contact with God. We live up here, though. Pretty amazing, isn't it? A lot of people don't understand us, do they? We got our heads in the clouds. As long as our feet's on the ground, you know. The thing I love about AA, it has to work, and it has to be practical. There's got to be evidence of your recovery. And that's what we look for. And so my poor mom died, and I have four boys. My mother never changed a diaper of any of my kids. And never rocked one baby of mine in this sleeping, unconscious disease. And when I buried my mama with dignity, because I love my mother, she had the same disease I had. When one tear shed at her funeral. I don't tell that to anybody, I tell it for you. I can stand there now, I got the same disease. What's the difference? You know, hey, desperation, willpower. I think it's the grace of God. You know, I do my job in AA. I get to do it. My brother died drunk. You know, he was grilling steaks and smoking some of that non-habit forming marijuana. You know, he announced to the group, there'll be no problem having cookies made in this group, will it? A lot of brownie makers in here, too. So my brother was stoned, and he had his little boy right there, and he was grilling steaks, and he said, "Watch my kid." He said, "I'll be right back." Got on a motorcycle. Cops chased him down and killed him. And my brother died drunk. You know, he met God drunk. God, I don't want to meet God drunk, do you? I don't want to meet God. You imagine, you know, seeing God for the first time. And because of this disease, my brother never got to see his kid grow up, catch his first fish, act in a movie, chase his dreams, go to Emory, graduate college, get married. This disease robbed my brother of everything. He died at 27 years old. I ain't laid eyes on my brother since 1980. Sad. But I honor his spirit. I know what he suffered from because I had the same disease. Then I sat here and my father died from drugs. He was alcoholic in treatment 3 times and ended up on the streets, highly successful businessman at one time. And I never forget carrying him to treatment, and the doctor looked at him. He said, "Jim," he said, "are you an alcoholic?" My dad said, "I'm not." He said, "I don't drink every day." Alcoholism. I didn't know what it was. All kind of alcoholic, probably 100. Big Book talks about 4. But it doesn't matter as long as you come in here and you've had enough. And you're on the first step and your life sucks. That's close enough. And my poor daddy died from this disease. And he died all alone. There wasn't one tear in history. But I buried my father with dignity. And to this day, I still put flowers on their graves. And I honor their spirit. Because I'm blessed. I know now. I never knew what it was. You know, when you know, it's your responsibility. The greatest thing God ever did is give us AA. Don't you think God, every day it's not a not drinking program? I mean, could you imagine if it was just a not drinking program? If you drink that, I drink that. It's really a miraculous program, isn't it? Full of adventures and sixth sense, fourth dimension. The life that I live today is really, really a life I've never even dreamed of. And so I tried to get out of that house, and I hated it. It's like a war zone. You know, have you ever heard alcoholism? I remember I used to go share at a nursing college. And I'll share it. Anytime I'm out in the public, I never give my last name because I always say AA, it pops out, you know. So I go to nursing college, and I tell all of them, I look at all the nurses up there, and they're trying to study us, aren't they? Oh, you got a craving? I hope so. What's your drug of choice? What you got? They don't know. They think we got a chemical drug problem. A lot of them think we got an Ativan deficiency. Man. A scientist, but not a person in whom the problem has been solved. Remember this, doctors, nurses, preachers, everybody comes to AA to recover from alcoholism. This is where they come. So I looked at the nurses, I said, hey, how's everybody? I'm Rick M. I'm a recovering alcoholic. About 10 nurses said, hey, Rick. So I kind of felt at home right there. Said, I want to talk about drugs, you know. But they used to do a little test. I know some of these people were counselors, and they draw a bottle on the board up here, and they take all these kids in here, beaten up kids, warped lives of angry children, you know, alcoholism. It's just an amazing disease. You can put me in a room of 100 kids, and I can tell you ones that grew up in alcoholism because they have a tendency to overreact. And so they put the bottle up there, and they tell these girls and the little kids, describe your mother and your father. And they put it up there, and they say, angry, hollering, no money, no groceries, loneliness, fear, hiding under the bed, tears, and, you know, knife. They just describe all this stuff, depression, psychiatry stuff. And she put all of it in the bottle. Sadness, desperation, homelessness. And then she'd get through and she'd look at the kids. And so, you know what was missing out of that bottle? Here's what's missing, alcohol. They never mentioned alcohol. You know why? It's just a symptom. I ain't got no alcohol problem. It's just a little bitty symptom. I tell you one thing. If you did what I did, you drink too. That was a painful life, by God. And now I know I'm free. Oh, I'm free in the sunlight of spirit, man. I love it so much. And I get to come here and watch a lot of y'all watch the lights turn on. There's nothing grander than seeing a newcomer get hope. That's all you need. That's all you need. You don't have to understand the program. Just get a little hope. A little hope. So first time I took a drink, I used to study people, you know. We're studiers. And I drank white lightning. Any of y'all ever drink white lightning? Oh, that's a, hey. That's like drinking gasoline, isn't it? Oh, boy, I mean, I drank that and put it down. So I was about to put it down again. And I woke up the next day in bushes, threw up all over myself, naked. But I was alone. Huh? The dog went up. And I'm here thinking, God, that was fun. I'm going to do that again. There were men and women who drank for the fact. God, it was electrifying, man. I loved it. So I'm here thinking, God, I said, oh, I'm going to do this as much as I can. And I did. And I advanced in high school, had a lot of anger. Any of y'all have anger? You know, anger does a lot of sadness, you know. Had rage. Any of y'all have rage? I don't have that anymore. Boy, I used to. God, I had rage. Oh, it cost me so much. But at one time, I was a pretty good athlete, you know. Of course, the older I get, the better I was. I think I'm the only guy that's been nominated for the Culver County Hall of Fame twice. And I've been voted down twice. And one of the coaches I beat up is on the committee. And I remember thinking, you know, he may still have a resentment. But I loved athletics. It was my way out of that hellhole. And that's my, it wasn't a home, it was a hellhole. Alcoholism is unbelievable. I did pretty good. I was in high school, and my coach looked at me one time. All these scouts was out there, and the colleges was out there, and I was playing basketball, and I was trying to get a baseball scholarship, and he put me on the bench. And to me, I'd overreact. I had no tools. I couldn't pray. I didn't know how to pray and meditate. I was insane. I suffered from a spiritual malady, and I beat him up. And boy, they overreacted. Man, they will not take an apology. Yeah. You ever slap a cop and try to apologize? They had me, man. Because they kicked me out of school. Scholarship's gone, everything. Had to vote on me. They had a group conscience on me. Bubba Smith came down. They kind of like we have, though. And I had to move to another school, and they finally voted, and they let me play. I was able to graduate. I couldn't graduate high school with people I grew up with because of this disease and overreacting. I just, God almighty, what's wrong with me? Why don't I do that, God? I'll do better. I'll do better. And I always did worse. You know, I had periods of sobriety in and out, and they finally allowed me to play, and I got a full scholarship, went to Birmingham, played at Rick Wood Field, and, you know, did pretty good, and had my college coach. He came up to me, Rudy Abbott. Somebody was sharing about it. They had a friend that checked on me on my story. And I beat him up, too. You know. And they named the stadium after him. And somebody in here went to that college he was sharing about. You know, I beat two coaches up. My high school coach, and they named the facility after him. And I beat my college coach up, and they named the facility after him. So I really, in my mind, I helped him. It's alcoholic thinking, isn't it? You know, everybody wants us. We have a lot to offer, don't we, John? It's us. And so he told me, if you come down to this college, you won't have to pay for anything. And I loved it. God was going to live my dreams. Did you almost get close to your dreams many times? Remember that? God, you know, we got plenty of willpower. You want something done, get an alcoholic. And if he loves it, he'll do it all day and night. A lot of alcoholics just unmotivated. You got to find out what you love, man. We have passion. We have willpower. It has to be the proper will. Exercise of the proper will. That's what AA gives us. So I went down there, and I was an athlete. God, I loved it. I advanced, and all these scouts, they loved me, and I was going to get a big professional contract. And I was working hard, and I was advancing. All these scouts loved me. And I had a Vietnam veteran. He played with us, and he introduced me to that non-habit-forming marijuana. You know how you can tell who's smoking dope? They say dude a lot. Yeah. Sometimes four times in the same sentence. Yeah. Our kid came in one night and looked right at my wife. He said, "What's for supper, dude?" I told my wife, I said, "Oh, he's smoking weed." So you know how you can tell who's smoking crack? What's up, dog? Crack cocaine. Y'all know the difference between an alcoholic hanging in there. Y'all know the difference between an alcoholic and crackhead. This will help you, especially with the youngsters. Alcoholic, get drunk, steal all your jewelry. Go buy more booze, drink all night, come home, beg you for forgiveness. Crackhead, steal all your jewelry. Smoke all night, come back, help you look for it. No difference, you know. That's me. But I love ball. And I just loved it so much. It was my passion. And my coach and all these scouts one day, and I'm up there hitting in the batting cage, and I'm working out, and I'm practicing, you know, like we do AA. We practice AA. Practice makes perfect. And he said something that offended my manhood. He said something like, "Get out of the batting cage." And I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm nuts. I have a slight tendency to overreact. And I took that, no, man. I took that baseball bat and did a, I couldn't believe it. Just like that. Career's over. Have you ever done that? I remember like, God, what's up there? I wish I'd say, why did God do that? My parent, why do you do that? Why do you do that? You know, he called me an animal. I only ever want to see you again. Just like that, everything was gone. Nobody signed me or anything. So I went all over camps. Finally got invited. I did play professional baseball for Kansas City Royals for 2 weeks. They sent me home. My last at bat, I did smoke a little bit. You know, I have disease. And I was nervous. I took a hit. You know, I took another hit. This is my last bat in professional baseball. That's not crazy. I mean, the thing I love the most, I remember a pitcher got up there and he threw a fastball, and I remember I just went, wow. I told the umpire, I said, did you see that? Second pitch, same thing. Like, wow. And I remember I got a little paranoid. And he threw the next pitch. I just kind of walked out. Went back to the coach. He said, go home. Career's over. Isn't that something? You told me, he said, you know, I'll tell you something, Rick. Why you do that? I have no idea. You're an alcoholic, drug addict. I had no idea what was wrong with that. I spent all those years out there drinking and drugging, quitting. So I finally went to church. Any of y'all been to church? Love church. Any of y'all been saved? I've been saved 3 times. Rededicated. Now I'm knocking now. I tell you, I'm open-minded. I have found my way. There's a lot of ways. God comes to everybody, honestly seeks him. You got to find a way to seek him. Alright? I love ours. Ours is all inclusive, man. I love this. Yogi Bhajan used to say, if you can't see God in all, you can't see God at all. And our whole program, love and tolerance, all inclusive. I've been all over, been able to travel all over the world, man. I tell you, it's just drunk, loving drunk. And I can't knock a preacher, man. I mean, I sponsor a couple of them, you know. And all I can tell you, boy, they got a long amends list. Yeah, they lied every Sunday. Yeah. But I'm a recovering hypocrite. They're telling that bad depressed. I'll tell you something. In that church, ain't nothing but a bunch of hypocrites. You know what he told me? He said, why don't you come back? We could use one more. Yeah. But I love God. And I've experienced God through these steps. He has revealed himself to me. I have really been amazed, you know, working this program. And if it'll work for me, it'll work for you. And so my great search, I was out there. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't keep a job. I finally got married. I decided I'd go to law school. You know, we all need lawyers, don't we? And you ever got speed dial? I used to have my psychiatrist and my lawyer on speed dial. And you know, today I don't have any legal problems. I don't have any mental problems. Emotional problems. I have no physical problems except a torn ACL in my left knee. And it doesn't really give me any problems. I have no health problems. I have no legal problems. I have no money problems. I have no financial problems. I have minimum anxiety, really hardly any fears. I have a lot of joy. And when I came here, I had none of those. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Isn't that unbelievable? The spiritual awakening of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, good alcoholic, I'm going to law school. Love law school. I'm going to be a barrister, advocate. So I go to a doctor, I tell him, I said, I'm going to make something out of my life. I'm going to be a lawyer. And I think I got a slight problem with drinking. He said, you an alcoholic? I said, absolutely not. I do drink a little too much on occasion. So you know what he gave me? He gave me a beautiful prescription for Librium. Oh, my God. You just go to law school and drool. Yeah, I'm a recovering drooler. And you got to read the pages a lot of times on Liberty. It's hard to focus. Have you ever taken Adderall and read 2 books and didn't remember anything? he did. Stay up all night and watch every movie. You don't remember any of it. One of the benefits of recovery, you can go back and watch all them old movies. So anyway, I graduated law school without honors. And I decided, you know, I had no money, always broke. I said, God, I ain't got time. I got to drink. You know, alcohol, that's a full-time job, isn't it? We're busy. We're busy. What are you doing? Nothing. Where are you going? Nowhere. What are you going to do all day? Drink and hide? Drink and hide. God, I'm saying. You know, I'll tell you, nobody knows the loneliness of an alcoholic. That's why we love being with each other. It don't take much for us to be happy, you know? I mean, we'll have a conference about nothing. But as long as we're together, we're never alone anymore. And I never belonged anywhere. I tried. Never belonged anywhere. And so I graduated law school and decided I couldn't practice law. So you know what I decided to do? I got in the pharmaceutical business. Boy, that's a bad business for us. And that business almost killed me. And they used to send me cases of pills. And I'd get so excited. And they'd send me Ativan and antidepressants and Prozac and all this stuff. And instead of taking them to the doctor, I'd take them. Thought I'd taste them, you know. I'd go in there and tell the doctor, boy, this is really good tasting stuff. Yeah. And what a nightmare. Just progressed in the phase of alcoholism. Remember the first phase of alcoholism? The fun phase. God, I loved it, didn't you? Second phase, the progression, is the fun, problem stage. Remember that? Still worth it. And then the last phase, it brings you to the last stop on the block, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, is the problem phase. And when we get here, we suffer and we ain't got nothing going for us. And people show up in our life uninvited, like judges. And they ask you silly questions like, how do you plead? It would be nice if you plead guilty with an explanation. And so that was my greatest search. And so I had my best friend. I'll tell you a little bit what happened. And then I'll share about recovery. I had my best friend. I love Bruce. He was a pharmaceutical rep just like me. His daddy committed suicide. You know, we lose a lot of people in AA, don't we? We've had 5 suicides in my home group in the last 4 years. Don't you wish you could hold them and hug them, you know? A lot of people never get out of this. They just never do. I don't understand why. You know, there's a little bitty paragraph in To the Wives, if you ever read it. It tries to tell a wife, you got to do what you got to do. Be easy with him if you can. It's interchangeable, spouse. But it says right in there, it says, you know, God himself has either removed his alcoholism or he hasn't. Think about that. Why is that? Why do I get recovered? Not because I'm a great guy. Not because I'm a good person. And I don't know about you. Some people may deserve it. I don't deserve it. My sorry ass ought to be in prison. Or I'll be in jail. Or I'll be dead begging God for another chance. But I came in here and I found somebody whom the problem had been solved. Who loved me enough and didn't judge me. He took all the pressure off of me. I was always in Alcoholics Anonymous worried about step 9. You know. By the way, is there any recovering strippers in here? No, you don't have to raise your hand. I'm just saying, if you got more strippers on your men's list than teachers, you could be an alcoholic. And that's me. God, I love strippers. Oh, love them. They care. And so Bruce, he went in treatment, and I remember telling him, I said, man, that ANA, I said, it don't work, man. My mother went to ANA, and, you know, she died in alcoholic coma. My dad went to ANA. I said, I'm going to tell you something, it don't work. So I didn't know. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a theory until you experience it. See, y'all be able to go in that book and say, I used to go in a big book and I'd look, all the 148 promises, you'll be able to be along with perfect peace, fourth dimension, sixth sin, much of hell. I say, it's important. Financial recovery. Your health will be restored. We're miracles of mental health. Our physical health is restored. I thought, that's impossible. And I'd look at that book and I'd go around people, I'd say, John, does that happen for you? Page 25. Has God entered your heart and lives in a way deep and miraculous? Has your whole outlook changed on life? Has all the fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter, turn that around, that's after here? That's heaven, isn't it? Has all the fear, that's all the fears, there's not even, has that happened for you? And some people say, yeah, it has. They give you hope. And then some people said, it hadn't happened for me. I always had hope in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd see the stores. I'd come to AA every day. I still go all the time. I want to see miracles. Have you ever seen anybody come in here and the lights come on? It's unbelievable. Get a job. Come sit. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then you'll see tragedies too. And, you know, you see it. You'll see that. It's just amazing to see human suffering. You ever seen anybody lose their kids and their career and all that stuff? That's why I come back in here. It keeps me grateful. So I told Bruce, I tell you one thing, if it works for you, I'm going to try. Show me, God, some evidence. Look for evidence. You can tell anybody's an alcoholic drug addict, you look for evidence. And we're good at it. You want to know who's in recovery? If you want to know who loves God, look for evidence. And if you love God, act like it. If you love your home group, act like it. If you love your sponsor, act like it. You see, that's our code, man. Is love. That's what the newcomer responds to. As Chuck Chamberlain says, not profundity. You know, they don't need an intellectual. They don't need this, what's wrong with you. They just want love. Man, keep coming back. Keep coming back. Keep coming back. And then all of a sudden, you may grow and understand. A month later, my company fired him. You know, they don't like alcoholics selling their drugs. Very narrow mind. Because I'll never forget, he went to AA, he called me, he said, man, I got me a sponsor. And he said, these people call, he said, man, I got a few friends. I have no friends. You know, they say, change friends. I ain't had none. And they told me, they promised me, do your job in AA. Do your job in AA. Let us help you. A year from now, everything will be different. I promise. A year. Matter of fact, if you get active in Alcoholics Anonymous, it'll be the greatest year of your life. You'll be a free man. You'll help people I can't help. Isn't it amazing to be recovered and being given power to help other people? And with our deep, dark past in God's hand, we can avert death and misery. That's a lot of power in it. That kind of, see, that allows you to get up in the morning with passion. And when I got here, I had a purposeless life. My life had no meaning. I was such a taker. And AA's given me a design for living that works even under pressure or difficulty. And so Bruce, I got a phone call 2 weeks later, and Bruce hung himself, you know. Still, this day kind of, you know, breaks my heart. You know, I've cried a lot in AA. I've cried happy tears, which I never did, you know, getting here. But I've cried sad tears, too. And I try to honor him and my brother and my mother by carrying the message and living this life. And what was said at his funeral was terrible. You know, nobody loves us, do they? You know how it takes an alcoholic to love one, don't it? You know, an alcoholic in his cups is not a lovely creature, is he? So we don't give a crap if you sober up. We still love you. You can use drugs. We still love you. You can work no steps. We still love you. Because you got a disease that's greater than you that will annihilate all things worthwhile. You hadn't grown in understanding, that's all. And so they said some really, really nasty things about him. And, you know, I cried a little bit. He hung himself, took all his clothes off, hung himself in his mother's house. Can you imagine that mother? Can you imagine living with that? So if I saw that mother at the time, I wasn't empowered. But if I saw that mother, I'd just tell her I loved her. I can't empathize. I can't identify with that. But my prayer for you is to get active in the most powerful program of Al-Anon, which has the same promises and the same spiritual awakening that we have. My wife just celebrated, I tell John Wednesday, my wife celebrated 25 years of active Al-Anon. And I told her, I said, I'm going to tell you something. One for me, you wouldn't even be in Al-Anon. Take a look for it, you know. He said, well, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't need it. My wife spoke at Hilton Head, and I mean, we've had so much fun. John's wife's in the program. If you got a partner in the program, remember, two or more, God's there. There's so much power there. We have had so much fun, and we've had some tragedies, too. My wife spoke at Hilton Head. I was talking to these ladies. I forgot who they are, but my wife, and there's like 1,000 people there, and they didn't ask me to speak. You know? So I was up there saying, you need any water, honey? You know, be careful. You know, be nice. And I'm talking about in front of that whole group. I'm calling everybody in there. My wife told all of them that I was drinking and pulled a gun on her. And then she took the gun away from me and pistol whipped my ass. Now, you know, that's bad for your self-esteem, man. I don't believe it. But I do remember this. She did do that. And I can tell you, I remember thinking when I was on that ground, my first thought, God, I wish I hadn't taken so much Xanax. I'd get her. But I never won a fight. I couldn't fight. Stomp. We bring great news to the sufferer. We carry the message. It's an amazing message that you can be happy, joyous, and free, and have a spiritual awakening, and be empowered, that you can help others. Al-Anon or AA. I remember telling my wife, I said, God, I need help. And I went to see a doctor, by the way, in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I knew he was in the program. I'd called on him, and I told him, I said, Dr. Al, I said, I need help. And he just got up. You know, we love it, don't we? I mean, we love it. We know God is using us. That's why we're here, man. An alcoholic loving another one. And he knew if I waited until tomorrow, I wouldn't show up. But he went out in the reception room and they pulled. And he told the secretary, he said, listen, I'll be back in about an hour. She said, you can't leave. You've got all these patients. He said, I'm the boss. And he carried me treatment. I never forget him, man. His spirit lives me. You know, he died drunk. Mm-hmm. You know, in here, you never forget the people that help you, do you? Yes, I mean, you never forget them, man. God Almighty. I'm here telling my sponsor, I said, God, which step is the money step? You know, which step you work, get a job? You know, he said, oh, don't worry about it. Go to meetings. You know, do your job in AA. A year from now, it'll all be better. Dead time. He took all the pressure off me. And so I dressed up and I was going to treatment, but I had a slight detour. You know, I ended up in mental institution. Any of y'all been in mental institution? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe it. That's kind of a resume buster, isn't it? Yeah. Where did you, mental institution? But I showed good leadership skills. When I'm punctual, I showed up right on time for my meds. And I said, would you hire me? Oh, that's a bad deal, isn't it? Oh, I walked in there, but I wore my nicest suit going in. I didn't want them to think I was sick. So I go into mental institution, and this beautiful lady, elderly lady, comes up and hands me the Bible. She says, "You know, you need Jesus." I said, "What?" I said, "You need Jesus." I grabbed that Bible, I threw that Bible across the room, and don't ever do that in mental institution. They're coming. And they got white coats on and gloves. Oh, glove violation. And gloves. But you know, they brought me good news. They brought me a shot. God. Oh, I love shots, don't you? Got a shot for you, please. Where you want to stick it in? I'm a Boehner, man. But this is a bad shot. I mean, this ain't the kind we like. It's Thorazine. Any of y'all ever had Thorazine? Oh, you can't even run. I remember thinking when I said, I'm gonna escape this place. I said, I'm leaving. I look, nobody's looking. I went right out that door. You know, it took me an hour to get to that door. You can't run. So I woke up naked in a room with no doorknobs. And that's my definition of a bad day. So what happened to me? What's the miracle? The door opened. Oh, guess who comes to see me? It wasn't the doctor, the lawyer, the priest, the psychiatrist. It was a person in whom my problem had been solved. It was a recovering alcoholic. And you'll know a recovering alcoholic when you see one. It's amazing to see it. I'd never tell anybody I'm an alcoholic. Don't do it. They won't hire you. But tell them you're a recovering alcoholic. It's an amazing thing to be in recovery. And this guy came in there and told me he loved me. And I couldn't believe it. He said, "I don't care what you've done. I loved you. I'm just like you." He said, I got a promise for you. You'll be happy, joyous, and free. You don't ever have to take a drink again." I said, "What? What? He says, "Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Oh, listen." I said, "AA don't work. Especially for me." You know, he started hollering at me in that room in old doorknobs. Knowing I'm overly sensitive. He had the audacity to tell me the truth. He said, "I'll tell you something. I love you. I'm going to tell you the truth. It sets you free." He said, "You ain't nothing but a half-measure guy." He said, "AA will never fail. It's impossible to fail. The most powerful program on this earth that you practice. You got to claim progress. Make a little progress." And I'll tell you another thing. You never did an inventory. You never shared the exact nature of all your wrongs, people you hurt. Never got on your knees in 6 and 7. Never made a list. All those people you destroyed. I'm almost back there right now, but Jesus. He said, "You ain't never had a spiritual awakening." I said, "How do you know that?" He said, "You're in here." I'm like, that guy is amazing. He's amazing. So I was on my journey. I said, "I'm going to try it." And I had a girl, you know, a counselor, try to get me to do my inventory. And I said, "I didn't try. I couldn't do that, man. It took me a while to trust somebody. You know, but God, I just was embarrassed of things, you know. Oh, my God." But I did do an amends list. And she said, "You know, one of these days, I hate everybody. And I was a victim. And I hadn't done an inventory and looked at, you know, my wrongs." And I did love her. I trusted her. And I did the men's list, and I made a duck in there. You know, you got a lot of time. You know? 2 billfolds, and, you know, a pipe, you know. And so my kids, they let me out at 3 o'clock. And my family showed up at 6 o'clock. And I didn't know if they was going to come get me or not. And so my kid looks at me. He said, "I want to go to McDonald's. We're in Birmingham, Alabama." And the other one says, "Hardee's." I pulled in. I said, "Oh, we'll go to McDonald's. I ain't seen them in." I was in treatment 38 days. And so I go in McDonald's, and I look over there, and guess who I see? I see my college coach, Rudy Adler. And I actually thought the methadone was kicking back in. And so I went over there. I made amends best I could. I hadn't done an inventory. I wasn't armed with the facts. I went over there, and he goes like that. You ever had anybody do that? That's alcoholism. And he said, "Man," I said, "God, thank you so much. I couldn't have gone to college, law school. You know, you did everything. I'm so sorry, and I'd like to make amends and make it right if I can." You know, he said, "God," he said, "you look great." I said, thank you. He said, I hear you're a highly successful lawyer now. I said, I am. I couldn't tell him, 5 minutes ago. I said, no, it's just. So that was on my journey, and I went outside to the car. My wife was out there, and I pulled my men's list out, and I said, listen, who's on top? She looked and said, Rudy Abbott. I said, I made a man. I said, God's working in my life. My program is kicking in right now. You know what my wife said? I don't know. She said, by God, why am I not on top? Always, put the wife on top. So I share a few stories and close about my recovery. My company fired me, and I sued them. And they said, we can't fire a guy from AA, recognized disease. And so they shipped me to Omaha, Nebraska. I lived in a halfway house. And I lost everything I had. Lost my family and lost my career and lost my job. They wouldn't hire me. I finally got back after a year. Lost my home. And I finally got real active in AA, though, and I had hope. And I remember sitting at the halfway house, this kid, he was 19 years old, and he said, God, he said, Rick, he said, I love AA. He said, I love my sponsor. What? It's my sponsor. He said, I love him so much. He said, I got so many friends today. He said, I'll tell you something. He said, I'm 19. He said, this is the greatest thing ever happened to me. He said, I'm going to college. He said, you see that car right there? I got insurance on that car. Oh, by God, he's doing better than I am. He said, that's proper tax, which is always good. He said, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And I remember thinking, I'm in AA. That kid gave me hope. I remember one time I went to see a friend of mine make amends, Carl Dooley. He's in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He had all these show dogs, these bird dogs. He'd breed them out, $10,000 every time he bred one. He had trophies everywhere and ribbons. He said, God, look at this Roscoe. God, look at Roscoe. Have you ever been jealous of a dog? I remember thinking, that dog's accomplished more in his life than I have in mine. I wish I had that dog. But not anymore. So I got active, got me a good sponsor. And I finally took the steps, And, the two requirements, we'll do anything in the world for you, I promise you. Just ask us. The two things we can't give you, though, is that requirement. Bill Wilson waited to the fifth step to even mention the fifth chapter mentioned the steps. The two requirements we can't give you is can you concede to your innermost self? Can you do that? Can you give up? Can you surrender that you're an alcoholic? See, we can't do that for you. It takes a lot to get surrendered. And then we read it every day. It tells you who don't recover. Those who cannot or will not completely give themselves. Simple program. Another requirement is we ask you, and we beg you, be fearless, thorough, very star, because don't wait. You might not make it, If you want what we got, if you don't, that's fine. We don't argue about anything. And you're willing to go to any length. And you're ready. Then you can take these steps. You got to meet those two right there. Our job is to take all the pressure off. Show you how to do the step. My sponsor showed me how to admit the exact nature of my wrongs, and I did all of that, and I cried a river, man. God Almighty. If you want to really see how loving, gracious God is, do an inventory. Matter of fact, put your mother up there and write all the wrongs that you did to your mother. Then put your father up there and write all the exact wrongs that you did to him and your kids and your wife. And you'll never look at them ever the same. I hated my mother and daddy. I was a victim. And I did an inventory and I looked at all the things that I did to my mother and daddy. I made direct demands and many demonstrations. And I did my job in AA, and I made direct demands, and then I carried it forward. And when my mother died, we went in her bedroom, and I never forget, she never let anybody go in there. I wouldn't let anybody go in her house either unless it was an alcoholic. Well, you wouldn't judge her. I did the same thing. And we pulled down a dresser drawer. And, there's over 100 cards that I'd sent her. 100 cards. She kept every one of them. And I remember thinking, God, when I buried my mother, I had no words unspoken, none deeds undone. I had no regret. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, God, I had so many regrets. I lost so much. Everybody used to tell me I had potential. You know what that means? That means presently your life sucks. Yeah. Did you ever hear anybody say, he got potential. That's my man. I'll call him. He's jobless. And so I did my job in AA. And I did an inventory. And I got on my knees and I made direct amends. It took me 8.5. The 5 of them. It took me 8.5 years to pay all the money back. But it must be done. Old IRS. Oh, my God. If you want to stay up at night, old IRS. And gave him my 401k, and I remember me and my wife, we had no money, we were crying, you know, sitting there. My wife said a profound thing. She said, at least now you mark them off your list. And every time you mark somebody off your amends list, you are claiming spiritual progress. If you owe somebody $1 or $10,000, it's still just one check. And in recovery, I've had 4 boys. One's a dentist, one's a special forces guy in the Navy chief. Another one just moved out of the house, and then another was in college. And my first 2 kids, when they were born, I was stoned and drunk, and I missed the whole thing. The last 2 kids were born, I was able to cut the cord. My 3rd child had heart problems, almost died, and he just got his black belt in martial arts, and he's recovered from that, but he almost died. Had open heart surgery. I was telling John, I ended up sponsoring my son's anesthesiologist. You're talking about having mixed emotions. Yeah, you hear your kid's anesthesiologist feel sad. Then my last kid was born on my 80th birthday. I cut the cord. You know what the odds are on that? 1 in 365. It's just been a remarkable journey. I've seen my kids go to jail. I've had 3 kids. I tell you, man, it's been some heartache. I've lost I lost a lot of money. I've made mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsored a stockbroker with an emphasis on broker. And, you know, he forgot to work the steps. I gave him a bunch of money and he shorted me and I lost all my money. And to this day, I hope he gets back in the program. He'll say, come on, I'll share these 2 stories. You know what's amazing? All that pain. Well, I have a God box, and some things I can't handle. I'm telling you, my kid's in jail, man. He's flunking out of college. I lost all that money. It's hard to explain that to the wife. And so I went and read a book about investments and started doing stocks and learned a little bit, American Online. And, I've got to say, everybody's doing that. And who's doing this? They got a monopoly. Got a monopoly here. And God blessed it 100-fold. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I was able to retire at age 42. And that's pretty amazing for a bum like me. You know, I ain't have anything. Live by the ocean. I swear to God, when I'm meditating, I breathe deep every day, and I have that conscious contact with God. I do a gratitude list. I'm just so grateful. These 2 stories, Diane made amends to my basketball coach. They named the gymnasium after him. I went to see him. I sponsored a guy, and he's speaking in Alabama, and we're eating catfish, and I saw Coach Willis over there, and I looked at him and I waited for him. I made amends to him. Been over 20-something years. Some of these amends have been real easy for me, and some have been hard. I'm just telling you, some have just really been hard, man. But I prayed for willingness, and I made amends to Coach Willis right in front of my pigeon, and he looked at me and I told him I was an alcoholic drug addict. He said, that don't surprise me. He said, why don't you go make amends? Made amends, Coach Frank. And I said, no, I ain't. He says, right up there. He's 80 years old. So I went in, knocked on the door. I beat him up, you know, in 1974. That's a long time, man. So he comes to the door and he goes like that. Jesus. And he wouldn't let me in. 30 years. I said, the big book tells us, tell them why we're there. It separates an apology from amends. I said, I'm a recovering alcoholic today. I'm so grateful to God. Bomb like that. I'm in AA. I'm here to make amends. He looked at it. He said, come on in. And I told him I was wrong for what I did. If I could make it up to him in any way, please let me know. I'm sorry I did that. You know, he told me, he was crying. I was crying. It's 30 years later. He said, you know, you gave me a gift. He said, I always thought that I was the reason that you lost all your scholarships. So you never know about your amends, do you? I went to my college and made amends to Rudy Abbott. And they named the facility after him. They invited me back. And I've been able to make tons of amends. And I guess the last story that I'll tell you is about hospice. And I'll end with this. Are y'all familiar with hospice? You know, with a spiritual awakening, we have no affiliation with anybody. You say, I've had a spirit. I love God. I live in God. AA has been my way to honestly seek. And I had hundreds of patients. And I had one patient, his name was Don Cook, and he was a Navy cook, and we shared a lot, and he wanted to know how much money I got. I'm going to wind it up. He wanted to know how much money I got paid to come see him. I said, I don't get paid either. He said, why do you do this? I said, because I'm a recovering alcoholic. God's blessed me. I'm trying to give back. Let's give back. Help people cross over in the dying process. He started crying. He told me, he said, you know, he said, I checked myself in here because I want to meet God sober. He said, I've never told anybody I'm an alcoholic. That's how important it is to an alcoholic. Sobriety. The man checked himself into a nursing home where he could meet God sober. Sobriety is the most precious gift on this earth to an alcoholic. And only an alcoholic would understand that. If you take it away, I can't even pray and feel it. I can't even smell a flower. I can't even appreciate a baby's laugh because I am in darkness. So we shared at the end of his life. He called me at a user dream, and he was so upset. And I said, no, it's just a dream. I've had them. He said, oh, my God, Rick, thank you. He said, I have no fear of dying anymore. A week later, he lapsed into a coma. They called me up there, and we were all sharing stories about Don. And all of a sudden, he lifted up, and he said, Rick, come here. So I walked on up. He said, Rick, he said, I'm dying sober. He said, I am so close to meeting my maker. He said, I'm going to thank you so much for being sober and conscious. He said, please tell everybody, he said, for this person, he said, I'm dying sober. I kissed him on his head that night. He died. So what I've learned in AA, you're never too young to be sober, never too old, because AA is about getting right with yourself, God, and other people. And so I go up there and put flowers on my family's grave, and on the tombstones got the day they was born and the day they died. And you know, in the middle is that dash. You know what that is? It's life, isn't it? And it's short. So let's don't waste it. I love you. That's all I got. All right.